What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording remote tonight. Joining me, as always, the CEO of Hedge Better, Justin Fine. This is the place to be for 1 hour commercial-free on the New England Patriots and the NFL. Justin, it is getting funner and funner to be a Patriots fan every week. The Patriots are on a heater right now,
yeah.
And it feels great to be a Patriots fan.
Yeah, it's a throwback, right? It's a throwback to what it felt like to be a Patriots fan, you know, for almost two decades here in New England, you know, winning lots of games, winning tough games, putting together win streaks, having aspirations of winning the division, the conference, you know, potentially setting your sights on a championship. Like, there's a lot to be grateful for right now. And like you said, it's a ton of fun. And, this team just continues to impress me each week.
It's a lot like the past, but then there's something I think that isn't like the past. And that's, when was the last time there were this kind of good feelings around the Patriots? I mean, yeah, they were winning a lot, but even at the end of the Brady and Belichick thing, which went on for 20 years and which we both enjoyed profoundly, and it was enjoyable because they won, there was a lot of bad energy in those last few years, even though they were winning. It's been a long time since the Patriots have had this kind of like good juju around them, good energy around them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is a team that right now, I mean, it's pretty much all positives, man. Like, you know, I know it's, probably our job to try to find things to critique in, you know, say what we think could be improved. And I'm sure there's a couple things, but you know what, for the most part, like, it's really tough to find stuff that I don't like about this team right now. I mean, I like everything that they're doing, especially when I see them get better each week. It's like all the problems that we pointed out at the beginning of the year seem to be a less of a problem as each passing week goes by, which is the sign of a team that's not only a good team, but a team that's getting better, trending in the right direction. And you know what? Now you're 8-2, you're in a 7-game win streak, and you're really in the driver's seat moving forward.
You say you like everything they're doing, and I assume you mean you like everything they're doing both on the field and off the field, because this is more than just about winning with this team. It is really the way that they carry themselves and the culture that they've built, and like the whole vibe and energy around this team is making it even more enjoyable, I think, to watch them right now.
Totally. And I mean, look, it starts with the coach. You know, we talked about what he does for this team, again, both on and off the field. And this is a team that I think is totally embodying who their head coach is. Like, you know, again, you know, we talked about this at the beginning of the year, just something so simple as greeting all of his players to congratulate them and give them a handshake after the game. It's like, I think that's like the perfect, almost like microcosm of everything you're seeing this year. It's just like a tough, tight-knit team that has good vibes. They enjoy each other's company. They enjoy playing for each other. And they're just putting it all together right now in a way that not too many teams in the NFL are.
1,000%, Justin. And let's face it. Like, Mike Vrabel hit a home run on the whole culture side of this. And there were a lot of moves that a lot of people questioned, that we questioned in the 100%. Offseason, sometimes moves even up until last week that sometimes didn't feel like they made sense to us. But when you look at the culture they've built and the strength of this team in that locker room, you know, it's starting to come into focus now. And this culture of this team, it was such a disaster. The bad vibes of the final days of Belichick. And then Mayo was just a total debacle in terms of what he did in the locker room last year. There was so much improvement that needed to be made in terms of culture. Vrabel did a lot of things along the way that clearly were to build culture that didn't make sense to outsiders. But when you see what he's built in that locker room, I think it's starting to come into focus.
It's totally coming into focus. And you know what? Look, I mean, you know, a lot of the things that we had questioned are are just slowly finding their way towards success. I mean, look, I'll tell you, like, you know, I know we're a little early for the whole taking the medicine segment, but, you know, I was very critical when they said they were bringing in somebody like Stephon Diggs, right? Not only because I questioned what he could do for them on the field, but I questioned his leadership. I questioned his locker room presence. And now this is a guy that, you know, you hear about him pushing Travion Henderson at halftime and giving him a bunch of crap and telling him, hey, you know, this is where we need you to step up, right? And then he comes out and Travion Henderson essentially wins the game for us in the second half, those two breakaway touchdowns. The talent of somebody like Stephon Diggs, like, you know, that toe tap catch in the corner of the end zone, you know, having a guy who can make a play like that. And I could go on and on about Stephon Diggs and a whole bunch of other guys on this team.
But you know what's crazy about the whole Diggs thing is, do you remember there were rumors that they were going to cut him in the spring?
I mean, I wonder how much.
Because they were so mad at him for the off the field stuff. But, you know, I mean, I guess what I would say to that is, like, look, the good vibes start building up. But when you start winning, right, it's easy for the good vibes to build up. And when you have a player like Drake May on your team, I'm sorry, it changes the whole culture of the franchise.
It totally does. Yeah. And you know what, again, like, you know, we were texting and, you know, you'd mentioned that Drake battled his way back from a tough stretch in this game. I think multiple times, right? He didn't start the game off too hot. You know, the rain got to him, it looked like, a little bit. You know, and then he settled in, played very well. And then in the second half again, you know, didn't have the hottest start. We can talk about the play calling there, but didn't have the hottest start. Found his way back, made a couple of big throws, a couple of big plays. So, you know, like, this team is just, they're just resilient and they're just finding ways to be successful. And that's what good teams do.
They're resilient and they're tough. And the quarterback is resilient and tough.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, because we've seen these young, talented guys come into this league and they flame out, even though they have just as much talent as Drake May does, because they just don't have the mental toughness, the emotional maturity. Drake May has shown in these 10 games that he has mental toughness, physical toughness, and resiliency that I think is one of the things that distinguishes him.
I mean, 100%. I mean, look, we had said back even before, you know, Drake May had kind of turned into this playmaker, game winner, you know, we had said that we had hoped that from what we were seeing in him, that he had had those intangibles that would set him up to be a good franchise quarterback. And I think he's just proving it. He's continuing to prove it time in and time out that he's got that. He's got that.
We said it the day he was drafted, Justin, and we were right. We were right. What you can pull the podcast the day that he was drafted, and we had a long conversation how it was his makeup that was one of the things we liked about Drake May, and that's proven true.
Totally, 100%. And you know what? I not to really switch gears here, but you know what? I look at this last game, and you know, I know there's, you know, a lot of comparisons that you can make to maybe, you know, the Buffalo game and you know, some of the other games, but this to me was my favorite Patriots win so far. I think it was their biggest win so far. And I just think, you know, the fact that they're still continuing to peak after, you know, you win six games in a row and, you know, I think you're kind of waiting for like the correction or maybe even the plateau, but they come out and I think they take another step to elevate themselves in this game. And I think this was their best win, you know, in my mind, or their most impressive win to date so far this season.
Oh, I agree with that. And, you know, look, I'm kind of tired of hearing about the schedule for this Patriots team. That's one of my takes for today is, like, look, this team now has two top quality wins against Buffalo, at Buffalo, and at Tampa Bay. You know what? Does Buffalo have two top quality wins? No. Does Kansas City, you know, Buffalo beat Kansas City. Their other top win was against the Ravens, who are a sub 500 team right now. You know, Kansas City, who have they beaten? You know, Indianapolis' two best wins come against Denver, a game that in all fairness, they should have lost. And I think against LA Chargers, right?
Yeah.
They also lost the Rams. Like, you know, all these teams who among these teams that the Patriots are competing with have two quality wins now, like the Patriots have?
Exactly. And I mean, you know, just to point out a further distinction, like both the Patriots' two best wins were on the road. You went into the other team's house and you beat them in their house. You know, the Bills beat the Chiefs and the Ravens at home. You know what I mean? And that's like, I think that's worth noting. Like, this Patriots team is so impressive. And you know what? Look, we talk about expectations and pressure all the time and the effect that can have on a franchise and on a quarterback. And it's like, look, here's the big difference I see between the win in Buffalo and the win in Tampa. And the reason why I think this win in Tampa was their best win so far. You know, going into Buffalo, you really didn't have expectations for yourselves. You were trying to just basically salvage your season, right? You didn't want to be 1-3. That was the big goal, right? Was you didn't want to dig yourself too far into a hole. But now you have the pressure of trying to stay on top of the division, the potential of chasing the one seed, the pressure of Drake May being called a potential MVP. You have the pressure of people knocking your schedule. I mean, you could go on and on. And for all those reasons, I think it was just that much more impressive that the Patriots were able to take another step forward the other day.
It's a good point, Justin. And let's face it, one of the real question marks around this team right now is that none of us know how Drake May is actually going to react when the stakes get really high. Because we've seen a lot of guys fall apart. I mean, look at even Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, they haven't won Super Bowls either. So, you know, that's going to be one of the real questions here as we get into the sort of post-Thanksgiving, postseason schedule. What is Drake May when the pressure's on? It's a total unknown right now, but Sunday was an encouraging step in that sense because that was a high pressure situation.
Yeah, 100%. Look, like you said, you're not going to know until he's actually in those situations. But if you have to wager a guess based off of everything you've seen, I'm feeling really good about it.
Right. Well, the other thing that you have to feel good about is that one of the things the Patriots are showing is that they can beat you in multiple ways. They can beat you if Drake May has a bad game. Yeah. I mean, they showed that, I think, on Sunday. At times, I don't think he had a bad game, but let's face it, at times it wasn't as smooth as it had been. They still found other ways on both sides of the ball to make plays to win this game. And that really is the hallmark of a good team. I mean, who knows that better than Patriots fans, right? You have to be the Swiss Army knife. That was Belichick's trademark. Yeah. I think Vrabel very much has built a team that can take that same strategy where they can run, they can play defense, they can outgun you. They sort of have that Swiss Army knife thing going on this year.
They do. And, you know, we had said earlier in the year that, you know, we want this to be a team that doesn't have to put every game and every win squarely on Drake May's shoulders, right? And kind of pressure him into winning every game for them. And I think we're seeing that, right? We've seen that he's capable of shouldering the load and stepping up when he's needed. And I think we're seeing that the rest of the team is capable of doing the same. Like you said, like Sunday was about defense in the running game just as much as anything, if not more.
100%. It was about the defense, I think, more than the offense, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
In some ways. I mean, I would even say as much as Drake May has been great and he's an MVP candidate, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes, but I would say, like, have they really won a game where he's actually had to carry the load almost exclusively yet? I mean, I think that's a question mark around them too.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing is all of the games that he has had to step up and be clutch, the rest of the team has kind of risen to the occasion too, right? Like, I think back to that Bills game, like Drake May was as clutch could be. I mean, he made some impressive throws when the pressure was on, some tight windows, right? But by the same token, that defense stood on its head at times and stopped Josh Allen in that offense, right? So it's like, you know, the rest of the team is not letting him down. Let's put it that way. So that even when Drake May does have to be that guy, the rest of the team kind of seems to be there to have his back.
I mean, I'm curious to see because it's going to happen eventually, where they're going to have to rely on Drake May to throw the ball 40 times and put up 35 points to win one of these games. And I'm curious to see what's going to happen when we said it a few weeks ago, when he has to play with the sort of restraining bolt off, when he's out of the bubble, the McDaniels-Vrabel bubble, where they're kind of able to almost protect him, even though he's played amazing. I want to know what's going to happen when everything falls apart and it's, hey, Drake, you need to hang 35 and throw the ball 43 times for us to win. Yep. And if he's able to do it.
Yeah, 100%. Well, you know what? A couple weeks, but at some point soon, you're going to have Baltimore coming in, right? You got the Bills again. You know, you got the Bengals coming up. Like, those are three teams that are all capable of hanging 30, 40 points on you. You know what I mean? Yep. So, you know, I think he'll have that challenge eventually at some point this season.
Yeah, I mean, if not in the regular season, perhaps in the postseason.
Right.
All right, let's a couple other takes I want to give you about this team and where they are right now. For me, Justin, after Sunday, one of my take homes is I've raised the bar on my expectations for this team. I've kind of felt to this point like we're playing with found money. Like we're playing with found money here, right?
Yeah.
And I don't feel that way anymore. Now I feel like this team has proven that they're the real deal. So I now expect them to win the division. Between them winning Sunday and Miami beating Buffalo, you know, my expectations have changed. Like, I expect them to win the division. I expect them to win a playoff game. This is no longer bonus. This is, you've got a legit shot here. So make the most of it.
Yeah, I definitely expect, look, I expect them to win the division, and I expect them to be right there at the end competing for the number one overall seed in the AFC. I think they're going to get it. And, you know, something that was crazy for us to talk about a few weeks ago, I think is now very realistic. I think the Patriots can consider themselves Super Bowl contenders. And I know that that's something that would have been very, you know, very just, I don't, almost taboo to speak of a while ago, or it even unfathomable at the beginning of the season. But I think it's very realistic to talk about it now.
The New England Patriots, Justin, right now on November 11th, 2025, as we stand, as they are, without making any additions, without doing anything else, are absolutely 100% a Super Bowl contender. They are right now the best team in the American Football Conference.
Yeah.
The conference is wide open. There is no dominant team. Buffalo is falling apart. If the season ends today, Kansas City is not in the playoffs.
Right.
Baltimore is below 500. Those are all dangerous teams. Don't get me wrong. I don't believe in Denver. I think they're a good team, not a great one. Ditto Indianapolis on that. Wide open conference. And a young quarterback that's playing out of his mind, you know, great culture, great defense. They are a Super Bowl contender today.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, you know, take a look at the rest of the league, kind of like you said, right? Like Baltimore and Kansas City, not currently in the playoff picture. You already beat the Bills. You beat Tampa Bay. I watched the Eagles and the Packers play the other night. Like, neither of those teams impressed me to the point where I don't think the Patriots stand a chance against them. Like, I genuinely feel like, you know, the Patriots may not be the favorite, but they have a chance to mix it up against anybody in this league right now.
That's just it. We've talked a lot about the AFC being wide open, but it's actually the entire league. There's no dominant team in either conference that I look at and I'm like, well, you know, the Patriots are going to have a hard time matching up. Now, there's a lot of teams that I could see beating the Patriots in a postseason game for sure. But there's no one that I'm like, okay, you know, we're not on their level yet. I just don't feel that way anymore after last week.
Yeah, 100%. I think this team is ready to compete with anybody. Again, the health is going to be a big thing with these guys, right? You got to stay healthy because we know they're not the deepest team. But as long as this team stays healthy, I don't see any reason to think that they won't even be a better team in a month from now than they are today, because they could just continue to improve. So as long as that health is there, like, there's no reason this team come playoff time shouldn't be one of the better teams, if not one of the favorites, to go on a run.
1,000%. And I might even go a step further and say they can probably handle a few injuries as long as Drake May is healthy. I mean, they just handled one. Ramondre Stevenson was hurt.
And Keyshawn Booty, right?
Yeah, and Kayshawn Booty, and they just won a huge game on the road. Two rookies stepped up.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little about that. We talked a little bit about culture a few minutes ago, but I gotta say this, Justin. I put this post on our Facebook page. It was one of the most popular posts we've ever had. I think we have almost 800 likes.
It's almost 900 or something like that. Yeah.
And that is a picture of Travion Henderson running into the end zone. Travion Henderson running into the end zone and turning backwards to look to his coach for permission to score is the microcosm, one of the enduring moments of what this 2025 Patriots team is. A team that is full of dynamic, selfless young players that are emerging, okay, and that believe in each other and believe in their coach. And I thought that play, him looking back to Vrabel, that was the perfect symbol of what this team is.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you heard Romo in real time on the broadcast going, I've never seen that. I've never seen anything like that, right? And it's because you really don't see anything like that. You know what I mean? Like, it was the exact reminder that not only do you have some of, like, the youth that, you know, that might not necessarily just be a given, right? It's something that, you know, you're checking on in the moment. But like you said, the respect for the head coach, like, you know, just the awareness. And also just in a personal note for Travion Henderson, you know, just how fast and explosive is that guy that he had the ability to hook it, you know, in look back and check for Vrabel's reaction. Like he was so far ahead, you know, so far behind the defense that he could literally,
he was doing the kind of things that like you used to do when you were a kid in a video game, playing Super Tecmo Bowl with Bo Jackson, running back and forth. It's crazy.
Exactly. So no, I loved seeing that, but you know, and I love even more that Vrabel gave him the go ahead to score. You know what I mean?
Did you think he was right to score there, by the way?
I think it's a 50-50 situation. I mean, you probably got a good chance to, I mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the Bucs still had two timeouts at that point in time.
Two timeouts.
So, you know, you got two timeouts at that point in time. And I think there was still, what, like a minute 50 on the clock? Something like that?
Yeah. So if you do the math, you're going to kick a field goal with like 30-something seconds left. Right. And have an 8-point lead and give them the ball with no timeouts. But I've heard the debate about this. And to me, I thought Henderson 100% was right to score. Like, I think you score there. And I'm going to give you two reasons why. It's a wet field. So no field goal, even a short one, should be assumed to be, you know, automatic. Right. And we have a rookie kicker still, by the way. And then the second reason is this new kickoff rule is so like unpredictable.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be kicking off with a one score lead and then one guy miss a tackle and then all of a sudden it's a tie ball game. So I would take my chances taking those points and making Mayfield drive that field, you know, which he scored on, but I thought it was the right thing to take the points there.
Yeah, I agree. And if anything, just the cherry on top is it's an extra little boost to your rookie running back who is having a breakout game that you're going to, let's face it, you're going to need to rely on him heavily moving forward. I don't know how serious this Ramondre injury is, but he missed a second straight game. Terrell Jennings, I don't know how serious his injury is, but he leaves, he's out for the game. And then, you know, Antonio Gibson's already done for the season. D'Ernest Johnson, you know, your playbook's super limited bringing a guy like that in. He's only been with you up from the practice squad for a little bit. Like, you're going to need Travion Henderson. So I love the fact that they told him to go score and boost that ego and that confidence a little bit more.
1,000%. And you saw really a little bit last week against Atlanta, a little bit of the explosiveness that the seeds were kind of being planted last week. And then you see it continue to blossom and grow. And I think it's super encouraging, but Henderson is going to be a huge factor for what this team is down the stretch. If he stays healthy, like his explosiveness is, I think, gives them an element that they haven't had yet to this point.
You know, 100%. If this breakout game is an indication of, you know, what we can potentially expect from him in the second half of this season, you know, assuming he stays healthy and gets the workload, you know, he's going to get the lion's share of the touches, I think, from here on out. Like, this offense is going to have an element that they didn't have for the bulk of this seven-game win streak. You know what I mean? Which just tells you how scary this team could potentially be if you can start getting consistently explosive plays out of Travion.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll bring something to them they just really haven't had. Let's talk a little bit, a few game management things. What did you think about Vrabel's clock management before the half?
You know, obviously, and it's easy now in hindsight to sit there and say, oh, you know, good decision. You love it. But that was risky. Like, I mean, let's just like that was risky. That was a bold move. That was very risky. I didn't love it at the time. And I'll tell you what, not only did I not love it at the time, I know it wound up being a great play. I didn't like the play call on fourth. The little
Justin, that was going to be my take, man. You just stole it. I love that they went for it. I hated the play call. I
hated it. Yeah. So, I mean, Drake May made a great throw and Stephon Diggs made a catch that very few receivers in this league can make, which was, you know, fantastic. So it all worked out in the end. But that was risky, man. The decision to do it and take the knee on first down, that was risky. And then the decision for that to be your fourth down play call, very risky. So I'm glad it worked out, but I didn't like it.
I love that they went for it on fourth down. Hated the play call. They were bailed out by an exceptional play by two of their best players. Like that was just the bottom line. It was a bad call. You can't waste plays. This team is not established enough. No one is. Right. You just got to get in. I did love the aggressiveness. I'm glad they didn't settle for a field goal on that fourth and one. I feel like you got to take some chances in that spot. And in a worst case scenario, you know, you're going in down 10-7 and getting the ball. I love the fact they went for it. I just hated what they did with it. You know, but to be honest, that wasn't all I was frustrated with is in the second half of that game. And I know we texted a little about this during the game, but I thought the play calling was way too conservative. I thought they got that lead. They got the 2-for-1 at the half, and I thought they turtled up in the second half. And I thought that was really foolish against an explosive offense, really kind of playing with fire. I didn't love the way, I mean, how many times did they run it on first and second down and put May in third and long situations, like 3 or 4 times? Didn't love the way they handled that.
No. And I mean, you know, we've noticed it. We've commented on it before. I mean, we even down in the New Orleans game, you know, in Romo called it out on the broadcast, right? Romo basically said, hey, you know, the Patriots got to keep their foot on the gas. They can't take their foot off the gas. Like, you know, they've been doing this in the past during this win streak, you know, in the second half, they've kind of let their foot off the gas and it's almost bitten them in the butt a couple times. You can't do that. When you got a quarterback that's this good, you cannot take your foot off the gas and get complacent. I'm sorry. You gotta put your foot in the throat and squash it.
1000%, Justin. And like, you know, one thing I would say about this is like May still does not have a 300-yard passing game, I think, in his career. I don't think he's ever thrown for 4 touchdowns in his career yet either. So, you know, clearly there's still kind of holding him back a little for whatever reason. And I get it because he's a rookie. He, you know, he has a habit of turning the ball over fine. I still feel like you can't be that conservative. If you're that conservative, it usually comes back to burn you.
No, especially when you're playing a guy who can routinely put up 300 yards and 4 touchdowns. You know That's what I right. mean? Like, so yeah. So I almost feel like you gotta adapt the game plan a little bit to your opponent. You know, it might not be as big of a deal when you're playing Spencer Rattler in the Saints, but you know, when you're playing against one of the best offenses in the league, an offense in a team, mind you, that just this season alone, I think has had like 4 or 5 comeback game winning drives in the fourth quarter. Yeah. It's like, what are you going to let them build momentum and get it close and give them a chance to come back and do what they're very good at doing? No, I think you gotta outduel Baker in his own game. You got to beat him his own game at this point.
That's exactly what they did do, is they gave Mayfield the chance to get back in this game. Yep. And I think when they went up 21-10 with like 13 minutes left in the third quarter, I think it was very possible this game could have turned into a blowout for the Patriots if they had been a little more aggressive.
100%. Well, you know what? Look, I had the same feeling in the second half of this Bucs game that I did at times in the Bills game, which was, here it goes, right? Like, you just almost felt that the momentum in the game was slipping away from them a few times in that second half, and that they had blown a couple of opportunities again, some of the conservative play calling. Luckily, the defense made some big plays, some big stops. that big throw to Mac Hollins by, which again, didn't result in any points, but it still, I think, just helped get the momentum back on your side a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I mean,
the play calling after that big throw to Hollins, that's a great example of what we're talking about though, right? Where they come out on first and second down and they ran ultra conservative plays and they put May in a third and goal situation and he made a bad decision, which, you know, but I would have liked to have been more aggressive on those first two plays and try to keep their quarterback from ever getting in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%.
Of course, you know, let's talk about Drake May and let's start with this since we're talking about that sequence. And it's like, look, Drake May got blown up two plays before he threw that interception on a penalty that on a hit that should have been a penalty. I'm sorry. That was a disgrace that nobody called a personal foul there. If you put Patrick Mahomes in that situation,
easy,
that's a penalty, right? Yeah. That was a helmet to helmet hit. People, I've heard people say he was in bounds. It doesn't matter if he was in bounds. The guy came in helmet to chin. That's exactly 15 yards for anyone.
100%. And it was so blatant. The ref was right in front of him.
Right there.
So yeah, no, that was egregious. You could see May was a little bit woozy after that hit. And I, you know, I think they did away with this, but I almost missed the days of, you know, a few years ago when you could challenge a penalty or not. I would have loved if they were able to review that, but yeah, that was so egregious. I couldn't believe it when I watched it. I mean, Tyke Smith, he came up right under his chin and just boom, helmet to helmet. And yeah, you can't tell me it didn't impact the rest of that drive.
100%. And I'll tell you what, Justin, like after that play, I mean, the referee threw the flag. I was expecting him to say the defender was ejected from Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be an ejection. And then to not even throw a personal foul on it, I thought it was egregious.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, just as long as we're talking about, you know, some calls that you really hated, I'm sorry. I know the Patriots got the stop on that fourth down near the end of the game, but how did they not blow Baker Mayfield dead? That play should have been dead. Baker Mayfield wrapped up. I mean, 100%. You know, I feel like everyone stopped playing and then he flipped it to Rashad White. Thank God the Patriots defenders didn't give up on that play and they were still coming crashing in from the secondary and they wrapped him up. But I mean, that was egregious too. I don't know how the hell they let that happen.
1,000%. And if a Patriots defender comes in at that point and lights up Baker Mayfield the way that Drake May had just gotten lit up before that, do you think they would have thrown the flag?
100%.
You know what I'm saying? Of course they would have. So you're 1,000% right. The whistle should have been blown. The play should have been dead.
Yeah. But you know what? Again, you know, you wind up losing the turnover battle effectively, right? You wind up having a couple of bad calls go against you and you still find a way to tough it out and beat a good team on the road. Like it's all encouraging stuff, you know?
That's exactly it. And let's talk. I want to take, before we, you know, wrap up the Patriots part of the show, I want to take like a few minutes and just talk about Drake May specifically, because we've kind of hit on a few things. We really haven't talked exactly about him. And I just want to say this, Justin, that if you don't think that was a great performance from Drake May, if you look at his stat line, and you see 16 for 31 and things being a little choppy and you say that wasn't a great game from him, then I would say that you might not know football that well, because that was a tough spot on the road, bad weather, tough game, tough conditions, really good defense, lot went wrong. The resiliency, the toughness he showed, I thought that was another great performance from Drake May.
It was another look. It might not have been his best performance, but it was great. And let's just look at a couple of those throws. You know, essentially the reason the Patriots win this game, in my opinion, you know, that first one to Kyle Williams. Look, that ball was placed in maybe a 6-inch radius where that's a touchdown. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like 100%. Like that's 6 inches. You know, whatever, that's either an incomplete pass, potentially a pick, or Kyle Williams gets tackled right as he catches the ball, right? That was placed in like the perfect position that allowed him to keep his momentum, continue upfield and break it for a touchdown. And then like the Stephon Diggs, you know, throw, I mean, that was a great throw. I mean, he put it where only his receiver could go up and get it. So it's like, you know, you can call him 16 for 31 and say he had a bad pick, say he didn't play his best game, but like, he made some amazing plays that were the reason that they won this game.
I mean, I feel like every episode for the last like 2 months, we're coming in here and saying that Drake May is making 4, 5, 6 throws that are just elite next level throws that are really the difference between winning and losing. And you can definitely say that on Sunday. I mean, some of the throws that he made were just unbelievable. And that's why I said it last week. I'll say it again. Like, I'm okay with him getting up there and striking out every now and then. I'm okay with a bad pick or a bad fumble every now and then, because this guy makes so many elite plays. The positive far outweighs the negative.
100%. Yeah. And you know what, look, the best quarterbacks are risk takers sometimes, you know what I mean? Like that's just the nature of it. So you know what? I'm okay with Drake taking those risks, because he's shown that he can pay off those risks time and time again, and that he'll far exceed any mistakes he makes with positive plays and positive impacts in the game. So yeah, I'm okay with it.
Is Drake May the MVP right now, Justin?
Look, man, after this past weekend, I still got to give the edge to Jonathan Taylor. I know people don't want to give it to a running back. I know it's tough, but I mean, you know, he ran for what, 240 something in three this past weekend. I mean, he is just a monster. I think Drake May is the MVP of quarterbacks so far, but I'm sorry, I'm still going to put Jonathan Taylor ahead of him just for right now.
Yeah, I agree with that. In fact, I have May ranked third right now. I have Matthew Stafford number one.
Okay.
What he's done the last 4 weeks is historic. Yeah. I mean, 4 touchdowns in 4 straight games with no interceptions. Never been done before in the history of the NFL. I think Matthew Stafford has to be the MVP right now. I'm ranking Jonathan Taylor second for the reasons you just illustrated. I'm putting May third. And I think the best argument for Drake May being the MVP is the fact that this team around them is still average. I mean, they're an average team without, you know, besides him.
Yeah.
There's no, you know what I mean? So you got to consider that into the math too. And then I put Darnold fourth, but that's kind of my top four right now, but I'm still putting May third.
Yeah. And I don't hate that at all. I mean, let me ask you this, you know, if the Patriots go on and, you know, they beat the Bills again at home and they lock up the number one seed in the AFC and win the AFC East, and, you know, the Rams are a wild card team. Let's say the Seahawks hold on to that division. Like, we got to factor that in, right? I think at that point you say, okay, Drake May's the MVP, even if Stafford is on a generational run, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look, what you're hitting on is that there's a lot of football left.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you're telling me Jonathan Taylor is going to last 17 games? How many running backs play all 17 games in today's NFL?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't happen. No. It doesn't happen very often. I remember last year with Saquon. It doesn't happen very often. So there's a lot of ball left, but the door is open for me to get the MVP. And, you know, in a sense, it's almost a shame that they don't vote on it after the Super Bowl, because I think the postseason is so important, but they vote on it at the end of the regular season too.
Yeah. I know. I agree.
All right. And then just very, very quickly before we move through around the league in a second, I just want to say this defense, I thought they really balled out on Sunday, and they were as much a part of this as Drake May or Trevion Henderson or Mike Vrabel or anyone. And a couple guys that I thought really balled out were, first of all, Milton Williams every week brings it. Guy brings it every single week. He is worth every penny that they spent on him.
Yeah.
Christian Barmore held my breath when he was hurt. Their ability to stop the run, Justin, I think is the backbone of this team much as Drake May, if not more. Okay. So I held my breath when he was hurt. He balled out. Jack Gibbons and Robert Spillane. Okay. Those guys balled out on Sunday. Both of them, huge signings. I mean, you look at this defense, the signings, the guys they brought in, it's a huge part of what they've been able to accomplish.
I mean, they're essentially making every team they play one dimensional. You know what I mean? Like they're forcing these other offenses' hands. I mean, Sean Tucker was the only guy who ran for more than 50 yards this season. I think he only did that. It was like 53 yards.
He got it on that last carry where he slipped a tackle.
Yeah.
And it would have been an NFL record.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, when you're not allowing teams to, you know, or players to rush for more than 50 yards on you, you are effectively forcing other offenses to be one dimensional. And it's so tough for teams to win games when they only have one dimension to their offense. So like you have to look at the run stopping ability and say that this is one of the reasons why this team has been as good as they have been. And it's rippling, right? Because look, they haven't gotten after the quarterback as well as I was hoping they would, right? I was hoping they'd have a couple more sacks, a few more pressures than they do. And I was hoping they'd have a few more interceptions than they do, but really they don't, but it's not hurting them because they're stopping the run and they're making teams very one-dimensional.
They control the line of scrimmage. Yeah. And I still think that really counts in the NFL.
Yeah.
You're right though. I mean, the turnover thing is a problem. They haven't had a turnover in 2 weeks. You know, I think that has to change if they really are going to win some postseason games.
Yes. 100%.
Okay. Well, I guess to summarize, let's put it this way. They have a top 10 defense, a top 10 offense, a top 10 quarterback, and a top 10 coach. So anyone out there that is still doubting the fact that they're a Super Bowl contender, that's a pretty damn good recipe right there.
Yeah. I mean, look, this team, you know, it's funny because we talk about the holes in this team's roster, and I still do think they have some holes in the roster, but for the holes that they have, to be able to call them a top 10, arguably a top 5 team in some aspects, in every aspect, that's pretty damn good. Pretty damn good. So, you know, they're getting the most out of what they have.
Like if you were a Kansas City fan, if you were a Buffalo fan, if you're a Philadelphia fan, I mean, Philadelphia can't score points.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You know? Yeah. So all these teams have holes.
Yeah. And hey, look, you know, everyone wants to talk about how tough Philly looks. And I'll tell you what, and match up against Philly, potentially the Super Bowl, who would you rather than a team that can stop the run? Right. You take out a Saquon Barkley. So it's like this team is just built to beat some of the threats that are standing in their way right now. I'm loving what I'm seeing.
Against Jonathan Taylor in the postseason, run defense against Taylor.
I guess Jonathan Taylor. I mean, they did it against James Cook. You know, they are doing what good teams need to do to win games. And it's fun, man. Like we said at the beginning, it's very fun to watch them play.
A quick look ahead, Justin, to this week before we move to around the league and really actually the rest of the season. Like, because am I ridiculous to say that, I mean, 13, 14 wins is 1,000% in play for this team right now?
I mean, not only is it in play, I would say that's the expectation.
With this schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, there's 3 games that I got circled the rest of the season in as far as, you know, potential losses. And I think, you know, as bad as the Bengals are, I'm going to say the Bengals just because that offense can put up 40 points in any given week. And then I'm going to say the Ravens and the Bills. But I'm sorry, like, even if they lose those 3 games, you're looking at a 12-win team. Wow.
12-win team. And 5.
So, yeah. So they're able to sneak 1 or 2 of those games. Yeah, this is a 13-14 win team. That's my expectation for these guys.
And the number one seed is so attainable for that reason. It really is.
Yeah. It's super attainable. There's a real chance that the road to the Super Bowl and the AFC runs through Foxborough. And I got to say, that's not something I thought I'd say for a long time.
A thousand percent agree. It's amazing to say. It's amazing to say. But there is absolutely a real chance that it will run through Foxborough. Looking very briefly at this game this week against the Jets. I mean, I hate that this game is on Thursday night because I feel like that's such a wild card. It seems like every Thursday there's one team that's not ready. Usually it's the road team, but not always. That said, I just don't see any way the Jets can beat the Patriots. They're a mess. I know they've won 2 games in a row, but I don't know. Drake May versus Justin Fields. Give me Drake May 1,000% of the time.
Yeah, Garrett Wilson, we just saw, is going to be missing the next couple of weeks too. So they're not going to have Garrett Wilson. You know, it's a run defense that should be able to shut down Breece Hall. And the Jets defense itself is kind of in shambles. I got one of those weird feelings though. Like I think the Patriots are definitely going to win the game.
Yeah,
I could see it being somewhat an ugly game. It's a short week. It's a divisional game. It just seems like, you know, you can never really count that out. So I wouldn't be shocked if the Patriots don't blow them out, but I fully expect them to win and take care of business.
Yeah. I'm thinking something like 20-10, a 20-10 Pats win. And I think it will be huge if Ramondre Stevenson is back. Cause this is one of those games you want to come in, run the ball, get some points on the board early, control the clock and get that dub and get out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right. You ready to move to around the league, my man?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So I'm not going to do the whole Bill Belichick minute thing this week, but I want to start by saying he did win. I mean, again, this week, the UNC could well end up being bowl eligible if they win a couple more games. So,
well, you know what, in classic Belichick fashion, or at least what used to be classic Belichick fashion, he's got a better team heading into the Thanksgiving stretch than he did at the beginning of the year. And that was kind of always the hallmark of his Patriots, right? They were always a better team middle and end of the year than they were at the beginning. They would start off slow. So they definitely started off slow. They're picking it up a little bit. I'm still not ready to say that, you know, he's righted the ship or that he deserves praise, but he's at least making it look like he's got a little bit more control over things than we might have thought a few weeks ago.
I'm really just glad for him. It doesn't look so ugly anymore. I mean, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look, we've said it from the beginning. It's like, it's fun, you know, or not fun, but it's funny to kind of, you know, watch as everything unfolds. It's interesting, some of these narratives that are coming out, but you know, I think we both love Bill Belichick. We both appreciate what he did here. We don't want to see him become a laughingstock, you know, and just be totally embarrassed week in, week out.
A thousand percent. It feels like the situation is stabilized down there a little, and that actually makes me very happy.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So let's segue into around the league this way, because I think the big story outside of Foxborough this week was the firing of Brian Daboll. So the Giants now have an interim head coach. Daboll was 20-40 in 60 games as Giants head coach. And I think the absolute death knell for him was he lost four games by double digits, four games where they had double digit leads in the fourth quarter this year, which is just unacceptable for any NFL coach. I will say this, Justin, the New York Giants, I think, are the team that is most likely, most poised to be the Patriots of this year or the Commanders of last year, next year. I think that job is a desirable job. I think there's a ton of talent. It's a flagship franchise, and they're going to have another top 10 draft pick next season for sure. I think that job is super desirable in New York.
Yeah, I would agree. I've heard some people linking John Gruden to that job. I'd love that. Yeah. He'd be a great choice for that job. And I'm sure I think there'll be a couple another, you know, a few other big names that are floating around.
Any chance they're interested in Belichick, or is that done?
Talk about interesting. I think it's done. I don't know. I think that would be a really bold move on their part to bring in Belichick. I'm gonna say that's done.
0% chance it happens. 100% chance I'm rooting for it, because it would be the best theater and the best way for him to end his career in New York with Big Blue. You couldn't write a better end to the story.
It would be entertaining for sure. Yeah, definitely.
It would be pure entertainment.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So do you agree with me that job though is a super desirable job next year?
Yeah, I think it is. You got a really good young quarterback. As long as neighbors in Scadaboo come back healthy, you got some great weapons to build around. You got arguably one of the best defensive lines in football, you know, great front seven. So yeah, you got a pretty good base for a defense and some pretty good young talent. Plus, like you said, it's a big market game, but a big market team. But you know, look, it's New York, and it's one of those positions that, you know, you're not going to be able to come in and hide in the shadows like you can do out in Carolina or Arizona. You know what I mean? Yeah, like you got to come in and you got to bring it and you got to be ready to take the heat. So yeah, I think you got to be really careful with who you bring in for that next opportunity, but I think it's very desirable for all those reasons.
Justin, is there anyone so Sunday, besides the Patriots, I think the Patriots made a huge statement on Sunday to the rest of the league. Outside of Foxborough, who made the biggest statement on Sunday across the NFL?
Who made the biggest statement across the NFL? Whew. I mean, it's a tough one, but you know, I think the Colts made a pretty big statement. I don't know if it was the biggest. It sticks out to me as being a big one, that come from behind win. Let's see. I mean, Chargers had another big win. The Rams.
I'll give you one.
Rams.
Yep. Yeah. You just stole the thought right from my head. Yeah. The Rams, I think, made the biggest statement going on the road against a 6-3 team and really dominating that game. I feel like the Rams made a big statement. I took medicine on them a few weeks ago because I said that maybe they weren't what I hoped they would be. But, you know, the way Matt Stafford is playing, 7-3 now, huge game this week against the Seahawks. You know, the Rams are kind of showing they're the real deal.
They're definitely the real deal. I mean, look, they got a good young homegrown defense. Stafford's been able to stay healthy. That was the biggest concern for this team at the beginning of the year, right? Was Stafford going to be able to stay healthy? And now as he's staying healthy, he looks great. Looks like young Stafford. And I think we've said for a while, McVay is one of the better head coaches in football, right? So yeah, I think the Rams are legit. They're a dangerous team. This is to flip the coin, right? You know, you just talked about them going up against the Seahawks this week. This is a great example or a great opportunity for Sam Darnold to take a step towards getting that monkey off his back,
right?
And saying, hey, in big games against big teams, when the bright lights are on, can you step up and deliver? This is a prime time opportunity for Sam Darnold to come in and capture it. What would be the biggest win?
I think that you could also say the Seahawks made a pretty big statement on Sunday. Not just the fact that they beat a weak Arizona team, but the way that they beat that team in the first half, a 35-0 lead. But at the same time, you know, beating up on a bad Arizona team is one thing. Beating up on a falling apart Commanders team is one thing. Going out and doing it against a division winning team and a great coach and a great quarterback like the Rams have, that is something totally different. You're right. These are the kind of games that Sam Darnold needs to win for the football viewing world to take him serious.
Yep, exactly. So huge opportunity for him. I'm going to be super interested this weekend. You know, very excited to watch that. And yeah, I don't know. Gun to my head, I don't know who I'm betting on. I'm going to take the Rams, I guess, just until Sam Darnold proves me otherwise.
But is the game in LA or it's in Seattle?
I have to double check that. I think it might be in Seattle, but I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I could check that right now. Yeah,
it's definitely. Okay, I'm gonna take a medicine and I'm gonna take some victory laps. I don't know if one victory lap and one medicine. I don't know if you have anything you want to take. I'm gonna take medicine first. I'm still not taking a full dose. I'm taking a half dose of medicine on this still, and that's Caleb Williams. I mean, he's playing pretty well. He is not the generational talent that we were promised. I'm not taking medicine on that because I stand by that, but he's not a bad quarterback. He's a good quarterback. He's playing okay. I think he's a top 15 quarterback right now. Let's face it, if Jackson Dart doesn't get hurt, they probably don't win that game. And I think that needs to be said. But overall, the Bears have, I think, won 6 in a row or 5 in a row. They're kind of a hot team no one's talking about. They've had a couple nice comeback wins. Williams has looked okay at times. He's not a total disaster like some of the other hype children that we kind of give a hard time to on this podcast.
No, I mean, he's keeping it together for the most part. You know, I think the biggest thing working against Caleb Williams is all the hype coming into the league. You know, his press and the, you know, that he received at USC, being the number one overall draft pick, the trade that went into him getting to Chicago. Like, there's a lot around his, you know, on his shoulders. There's a lot surrounding that narrative that just makes the expectations that much higher. But for all intents and purposes, like, he's not having a bad season. He's not playing poorly. And I would have to double check, but I think if the season ended today, would Chicago be a wild card team?
I believe they would be. Yes.
So there you go. I mean, I think he's definitely, again, I'm not ready to say he's a top tier quarterback, but he's proving. He's not,
but can it be okay if he's just a good quarterback?
Yeah.
You know, right. Like, if you have a good quarterback and a good coach and a good team and you make the wild card, that's a pretty good outcome. And it's kind of working right now in Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. We've seen good quarterbacks have success in teams with good quarterbacks have successful seasons. So yeah, I he doesn't have to be the best quarterback in the league for it to be a success.
Right. Like it's almost been unfair to him. Like you just said, the level of expectation put on him really from the beginning to be like the next John Elway.
Right.
And it might just be that he, and that's kind of why I've always kind of been down on him. It's not because I don't like him or I think he's necessarily a bad quarterback. It's because I push back on the hype. I just don't see what other people see. And I stand by that still to this point, but that doesn't mean he's a bad quarterback either. There's a middle ground for him and he's clearly proving he is at least a good quarterback.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you got to give, but you know, I think you got to give a little credit to Ben Johnson too. Cause I think Ben Johnson is, you know, I don't want to say totally responsible, but largely responsible for the turnaround that Williams and the Bears have had this season. So, you know, I think he's proved himself as a worthy head coach.
Absolutely. And I will also say, just to put it back to New England terms, that Drake May is playing at an MVP level with an average team around him. Caleb Williams is showing he's a good quarterback, I think, with a really good team around him that was kind of tailor-made to his strengths and to protect him. So yeah. I think that says a lot about May versus Williams and sort of the redrafting, if you were going to go down that road of that exercise. Like, I think May is clearly a better quarterback right now, frankly, but that doesn't mean Williams is a bad one.
Yeah. Yeah. The next thing I guess we can jump to, I'll bring it up is, you know, you texted me on, texted me on Sunday. And I mean, look, I know
you're going to take a victory lap on this.
I'm going to take a victory lap on it. Cause look, I know we were ready once when the Jaguars were like 5-2 or whatever the heck they were, you know, to say, oh, you know, maybe Trevor Lawrence is figuring out how to manage games and Liam Cohen's got this team in a good place, but I'm sorry, man. Trevor Lawrence is garbage. He's pure hot garbage. He is a mess. He is one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. One of the biggest busts that I can remember in recent history. And that little tantrum by Liam Cohen at the end of the game, throwing his headset, that look on his face said everything that you need to know, which is, you know, that was just pure frustration,
exasperation,
and anger,
exasperation.
Just couldn't contain it anymore. Knowing that he's got a team that with 29, 30 other quarterbacks in the league, they'd, you know, have what, 2-3, they're what, 5-4 now. They'd be a 6-3, 7-2 team. So yeah,
there's no question about it. And on the season right now, Lawrence has completed 59.5% of his passes for less than 2,000 yards, 1,998 yards, 10 touchdowns, 7 picks, a quarterback rating of 79, which is really poor, and a QBR of 41, which is actually even worse. He's 28th in QBR in the league right now. And that fumble at the end of that game, when you still have a legitimate chance and all you need is a field goal, I mean, that's just, that was just bad.
So bad, man. But you know what? It's par for the course. I don't know. You know, like the definition of insanity is do the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. It's like, we've seen this now from Trevor Lawrence going on what, 5 years? So it's like, I don't know why. I mean, we don't expect it to be any different, but for some reason the league keeps expecting that he's going to hit this turning point and he's going to figure it out. It's not going to happen. Trevor Lawrence is a bad quarterback.
He is. And you know, I've said this for many years, you know, Mac Jones is the best quarterback from that 2021 class.
Yeah.
And that's been validated. And I would just point out that, you know, the Jacksonville organization, they have done everything they can to support Trevor Lawrence. This is not a situation like what Mac Jones faced in New England, where everything has fallen apart and they've done nothing to accommodate him. The Jacksonville Jaguars have done everything to accommodate Trevor Lawrence and to get the best out of him. And they still can't get him to where he should be. They still can't get him to anywhere near where he should be. He's not even an average quarterback. Yeah. He is one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the NFL statistically right now. So the dream is over for Trevor Lawrence. You know, good luck with that contract, Jacksonville. It's a franchise killer. He's a coach killer. And if I was Jacksonville, I'd be drafting a quarterback next year if they had a first round pick, which I don't think they do.
No, it's just going to say,
that was going to be my victory lap if you want to get to that.
Yeah, please. No. Go for it.
My victory lap is very simple. Travis Hunter out for the year with ACL surgery today, did very little in his time while he was playing, was clearly a better cornerback than he was a receiver. And you pull the podcast after the draft last year, I said it at the time, that trade was a terrible trade for Jacksonville. It was a huge mistake. I didn't believe in Travis Hunter. They gave up way too much. I definitely did not believe in him as an offensive player. I said he would be a better cornerback than a wide receiver. I don't know if he's an NFL wide receiver. He did very little in the time he was out there. Absolute bust. You're the Jacksonville Jaguars. You now got two weights around your neck. Trevor Lawrence's contract in the draft capital you just gave up to bring in Travis Hunter. I'm sorry. That's a tough place for an organization to be.
Yeah, 100%. Awful trade. I think a lot of people questioned it at the time. That was just a new young GM. I think the GM is 32 years old, 33 years old.
Yeah, we said it at the time.
Just a wild hire. And he came in the league trying to do something crazy. And it's just a total swing and a miss. So yeah, you know what? Look, but that's what bad franchises do. Bad franchises make bad hires and bring in bad players, and they compound bad mistakes with even worse decisions. And Jacksonville is just the total embodiment of that. And I don't feel bad for them at this point. They're a dumpster fire and they're doing it to themselves.
Yeah, I just hope they win enough games so that if the Patriots don't get the bye week, the Jacksonville can get the number 7 seed and come up here, because that will be pretty much as good as a bye week.
100%.
All right, a couple more quick things. Buffalo, Miami. Now, you explain that one to me. Buffalo, a 9-point favorite in South Beach. The only possible explanation that I can come with to make sense of that is that Buffalo enjoyed themselves a little too much on Saturday night, right? They were out till 4 a.m. chasing women and doing God knows what, because how else do you explain that outcome? It made zero sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it was just... It was just honestly confusing to watch. I couldn't make... The only thing that I could think of was that, look, this team played their Super Bowl last week, because that is the Super Bowl for the Bills, beating the Chiefs in the regular season. It's something that they do quite often, and that's honestly the biggest thing they got going for them every year. And so we call it a Super Bowl hangover, maybe. That just, you know, that after going out and preparing for Kansas City, they didn't have anything left in the tank, and they took light this Miami team, who hasn't quit. I got to give Miami credit yet. I thought they would quit. They have not quit yet. But Buffalo, you know what? Fantastic. You know, we'll take it, dropping another game 100%. To a team that nobody 100%. Expected them to lose to. But you know what? I can't explain it.
It was the icing on the cake for Patriots fan, right? Because like, you're seeing the Patriots win this game in Tampa, and then a couple hundred miles away in Miami, you're watching Buffalo just fall apart. Yeah. I mean, I get losing a division game, but how do you come out and just be that unready to play an NFL game? There's only 17 of them a year. You're an NFL team. You're NFL players. You know, to come out and just be that mentally, physically unready, I mean, it'd get blown out. You know, that's what shocked me. Not losing 22-21, but getting blown out by a Miami team that clearly was falling apart at times this year. It's really hard to predict.
Yeah.
Hard to explain.
Yep. So awful loss. But you know what? That's the thing. I know we talked about the Patriots, you know, they shouldn't have lost to the Raiders. They shouldn't have lost to the Steelers. But you know what? Look, we're seeing all these teams have bad losses. You know, the Bills going out losing to Miami. The Chiefs have lost to Jacksonville. You know, the Packers losing to the Browns and the Panthers. Like, even really good teams have bad losses. So you know what? Yes. It happens.
1,000%, and that's why tie it back to New England. Don't take lightly what the Patriots have done here. The last 6 or 7 weeks.
Yep. 100%.
Okay, one last one. Then we're going to wrap it up. I got to talk about the Monday night game last night a little bit, and the Eagles-Packers. And just like, the Eagles won that game, but just how underwhelming the Eagles look on offense right now. And it looks like Saquon Barkley has maybe hit that running back cliff that we've seen so many of these marquee running backs hit. He looks slower and older. And the Eagles look like they just really struggle to score points. Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown, there's something real there.
Yeah.
Between the two of them, they really are not on the same page. The whole offense just looks like they're not on the same page. I feel like we've said this before about them, but I feel like this is the worst. This is the worst it's ever looked. I really wonder if the Eagles are going to be a viable postseason contender when they struggle on offense this badly.
Yeah. I mean, there, like you said, there's definitely some issues there. Devontae Smith has been like outpacing and out targeting AJ Brown. And like the last like four or five games, it's been pretty bad. I think AJ Brown looks disenfranchised. Like he looks like he doesn't want to totally. Be there. You know,
Did you see his effort on that fourth down play last night? I feel like he could have made a much better effort. Yeah.
I was going to say he gave up on that ball. Totally gave up on that ball.
It was an underthrown ball, by the way.
Yeah. But again,
you could have done much better.
Yeah. Totally gave up on it. And I just think there's, I don't know. I think this Eagles team that we saw in the Super Bowl that looked like, oh my God, these guys are unstoppable monsters. Like I haven't gotten that feeling once from them this year. And you know what? Look, I think Detroit's going to beat them next week. So, you know, I think the team like the Lions are going to expose them. You know what? That's, and real quick, I'll just say this. The Lions are my pick to win the NFC this year. I think it's the Lions' turn. I think we kind of slept on it a little bit the beginning of the year, waiting for a regression. But I think the Lions are going to go out and beat the bag out of the Eagles next week. Because it's just, you know what? Look, the Eagles got that Super Bowl hangover. They're a good team, which is why they're still winning games. You know, that roster is stacked. But they just don't have that spark, that electricity that they had last year.
The defense is Super Bowl quality. You know, the defense is absolutely good enough to win a Super Bowl, but there are just some deep-rooted problems on that offense. And I mean, we've seen this offense at death's door before. You know, let's not forget, in 2023, they weren't able to figure it out. And they got smoked in Tampa in the wild card round. Last year, they had moments like this and they put it together, but it doesn't feel like that's going to happen here. It's not going to happen here. Yep. I think the Eagles are a little bit in trouble right now.
Me too.
All right, Justin, any more thoughts before we wrap up this episode of the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots podcast?
No, that's it. Just another week that we get to do this with a smile on our face because we got the Patriots back, man. It feels really good. You know, again, we did this for a long time with the Patriots being one of the worst teams in the league right now, and yeah, they're just they're making it fun to be a Patriots fan each week.
Well, we started this in 2021, and it's like, really, if you think about what's happened since then, there were some great moments in 21, but, you know, not for long. It kind of ended bad. And then, you know, the 3 years after that, it's just been a lot of bad vibes and bad things here in Foxborough. So it just feels great to watch this thing is in its infancy and see what they're building here.
Yeah. Yeah. Trajectory is all up from here. So excited.
1000%. Well, listen, I hope everyone enjoyed this episode of the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots podcast. We'll be back next Tuesday recording, Wednesday releasing another episode. The Pats are on Thursday night. We'll both be there, of course, in person at Gillette to see what happens. But we'll record next week and enjoy the game Thursday. Enjoy all the games Sunday and have a great week, everyone.